Now, in this chapter, Greek criticism of Aristotle, we will read the next point, that is the theory of imitation, its nature, comparison with Plato. Imitation, a creative process. Aristotle didn't invent the term imitation. Plato was the first to use the word in connection with poetry. But Aristotle breathed into it a new and definite meaning so that poetic imitation is no longer considered mere mimicry, a mere act of servile copying, but is regarded as an act of imaginative creation by which the poet, drawing his material from the phenomenal world, makes something new out of it. The next subheading in this chapter is the common basis of all the arts. In Aristotle's views, it is the principle of imitation which unites poetry with the other fine arts. Imitation is the common basis of all the fine arts and it is this fact of imitation which differentiates the fine arts from other category of arts, that is, the useful arts. While Plato had equated poetry with painting, Aristotle equates it with music. It no longer remains a mere servile representation of the surface or the appearance of things, but in his theory, it becomes a representation of the passions and emotions of men, which are also imitated by music. Thus, Aristotle, by his theory, enlarged the scope of imitation. The poet imitates not the surface of the things, but the higher reality embedded within. As the emotions are also the objects of imitation of music, poetry has close affinities with music. It is a mistake to compare poetry with paintings as Plato did. It is more akin to music. In the very first chapter of the Poetics, Aristotle says, epic poetry and tragedy, comedy, also the dithyrambic poetry, dithyrambic, as also the music of the flute and the lyre in most of their forms, are in their general conception modes of imitation. They differ, however, from one another in three respects: their medium, the objects, and the manner of mode of imitation, being in each case distinct. Thus, the medium of the poet and the painter are different. The one imitates through form and color, and the other through language, rhythm, and harmony. The musician imitates through rhythm and harmony. In this way, poetry is nearer to music than painting. Further, the manner of a poet may be purely narrative, as in the epic, or representation through action, as in drama. Thus, different kinds of poetry differ from each other in their manner of imitation. Even dramatic poetry is differentiated into tragedy and comedy accordingly as it imitates men as better or worse. The another subheading in this chapter is objects and nature of poetic imitation. As regards the objects of imitation, Aristotle says that the objects of poetic imitation are men in action. The poet may imitate men as they were or as they ought to be. In other words, he may represent men either as better than in real life or as worse than they are. This means that, according to Aristotle's theory, imitation is not a mere photographic representation of the surface of things, but is a creative process. The poet selects and orders his material and, in this way, recreates reality. He brings order out of chaos. The purely irrational and accidental is eliminated and attention is focused on the permanent and the significant. He can represent men better than in real life, that is, his idea of them, which might be based on materials supplied by the history and legend rather than by any other living figure. Thus, he gives us a truth of an ideal or universal kind. He tells us not what men are, but what they can be or what they ought to be. His mind is not tied by reality. It is not the function of the poet to relate what has happened, but what may happen according to the law of probability or necessity. History tells us what actually happened. Poetry, what they may happen. Poetry tends to express the universal, history the particular. In this way, he demonstrates the superiority of poetry over history. The poet, freed from tyranny of facts, takes a larger or generalized view of the things, represents the universal in and through the particular, and so shares the philosopher's quest for ultimate truth. There is a universal element in great poetry and hence its permanent appeal. He thus equates poetry with philosophy and shows that both are means to a higher truth, both contribute to a better understanding of man and his life. By the word universal, Aristotle signifies how a person of a certain nature or type will, on a particular occasion, speak or act according to the law of probability or necessity. Thus, the poet constantly rises from the particular to the general. He studies the particular and on the basis of his study devises principles of general application. The poet transcends the limits of real life without violating the essential laws of human nature. Elsewhere, Aristotle says, art imitates nature, and in the Poetics, we are told the objects of imitation are men in action. In the former definition, he refers to the process of imitation. By nature, Aristotle doesn't mean the outward world of created things. He means by nature the creative force, the productive principles of the universe. There is no question of a literal copy of the world of reality. Rather, what art seeks to reproduce is mainly an inward process, a physical energy working outwards, deeds, incidents, events, situations being included under it so far as these spring from an inward act of will or illicit, E-L-I-C-I-T, some activity of thought or feeling. Man is the highest of the creatures. He has within him an urge to rise upward, and it is this ceaseless upward striving which a poet imitates. He renders man as they ought to be. The poet imitates the creative process of nature, but the objects of his imitation are men in action, or the actions of man or human life in all its manifestations. Now, the action may be external or it may be internal. It may be action within the shawl caused by all that befalls a man. In this way, he brings human experiences, emotions and passions, all that happens or is likely to happen to man within the scope of poetic imitation. As Butcher, B-U-T-C-H-E-R, points out according to Aristotle's theory, characteristic moral qualities, the permanent dispositions of the mind, the passing and transient emotions and feelings are all action and show proper objects of poetic imitation. The next subheading in this chapter is Ideal Possibility as Object of Imitation. Poetry may imitate men as better or worse than they are in real life, or it may imitate them as they really are. Tragedy and epic represent men on a heroic scale better than they are, and comedy represents men of a lower type worse than they are. Aristotle doesn't discuss the third possibility. It means that poetry doesn't aim at photographic realism. In this connection, R.A. Scott James points out that Aristotle knew nothing of the realistic or fleshly school of fiction, the school of Zola or Gissing, and so he ignores the third possibility mentioned above. Abercrombie, on the other hand, defends Aristotle for not discussing the third variant. Now, he says, it is just possible to imagine life exactly as it is, but the existing thing is to imagine life as it might be, and it is then that imagination becomes an impulse capable of inspiring poetry. Imagination may do no more than concentrate the actuality by dropping out all its insignificant passages. But that will be enough to make the resultant poetry or literature something quite different from the copy of the world which Plato's condemnation assumed it to be. CONDEMNATION. The next subheading in this chapter is Comparison with Plato's View. Aristotle, by his theory of imitation, answers the charge of Plato that poetry is an imitation of shadow of shadows, thrice removed from the truth, and that the poet beguiles us with lies. Plato condemned poetry on the ground that in the very nature of things, poets can have no idea of truth. The phenomenal world is not the reality, but a copy of reality in the mind of the Supreme. The poet imitates this copy. The objects and phenomena of the world which are shadowy and unreal. Hence, Plato concluded that poetry is thrice removed from reality, it being a mere shadow of shadows. The poets have no knowledge of truth, they are liars, and deceive us with the lies which they tell in their poetry. Poetry is therefore the mother of lies. Aristotle, on the contrary, tells us that art imitates not the mere shows of things, but the ideal reality, embodied in very object of the world. The process of nature is a creative process. Everything in nature, there is a ceaseless and upward progress. Everything in nature is constantly growing and moving up, and the poet imitates this upward movement of nature. Art reproduces the original not as it is, but as it appears to the senses. That is, it is reproduced imaginatively. Art moves in a world of images and reproduces the external according to the idea or image in his mind. Thus, the poet does not copy the external world, but creates according to his idea of it. Thus, even an ugly object, well imitated, becomes a source of pleasure. We are told in poetics, objects which in themselves we view with pain, we delight to contemplate when reproduced with minute fidelity, such as the forms of the most ignoble animals and dead bodies. This is so because of the imaginative coloring of reality in the process of poetic imitation. Poetry is thus a creative process, giving us the poet's conception of truth, telling us what, according to him, men ought to be according to the law of probability and necessity. The real and ideal, from Aristotle's point of view, are not opposites. The ideal is the real, throne of change and accident, a purified form of reality. And it is this higher reality which is the object of poetic imitation. Idealization and universality is achieved by divesting the real of all that is accidental, transient, and particular. Poetry thus imitates the ideal and the universal. It is an idealized representation of character, emotion, action, under forms manifest in sense. Poetic truth, therefore, is higher than historical truth. Poetry is more philosophical, more conducive to understanding than philosophy itself. Thus, Aristotle successfully and finally refuted the charge of Plato and provided a defense of poetry which has ever since been used by lovers of poetry in justification of their muse. He breathed new life and soul into the concept of poetic imagination, enlarged its scope, and showed that it is in reality a creative process.